And
Okay.
I think maybe we should get started. We do not have a quorum as of yet, so I'll go ahead and do the roll call, and then we'll move on. And if we get a quorum, we'll come back to reviewing and approving the minutes, if that's okay with everybody.
Sure.
Okay, so let's do the roll call. If I call your name, just say present or here. Ashley, she's here. Brianne Scarlett Fisher. I think I saw you.
Where?
Elma Bloom.
Here.
Emily Estes.
Here.
Franklin Johnson. Jeannie Mills Goodling. Dr. Fisher.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening. Lori Schott.
Here, thanks.
Laura Lynn Lord.
I'm here.
Thank you. Mark Collier. Marla Sanger.
I'm here and I can see everyone and hear everyone, but my camera is not working right now, so I'm
All
going to
right.
fiddle around and try to get it to going.
We're glad you're here and that you can hear us.
Yes.
Paul Childers.
Here.
I'm here. Tyler Clary.
Present.
Dr. Melnick.
I'm here. I think we're just one short of a quorum, by the way. Yeah.
Yes, we are. Danette York.
I'm here and my camera also doesn't work. Sorry.
Haley Pickus.
I'm here.
And did I miss anyone? Mallory's here.
This is Counselor Young. I'm here in place of Counselor Fuentes, but I'm not going to be very useful tonight. I'm not feeling very well, so I'm probably just going to be listening.
Well, welcome, and I'm glad you made it. I hope you get better soon.
Thank you.
All right, so until we get one more member to show up, we're going to move past the minutes and move on to Haley, who's going to present to us the proposed resolution and work plan around the prenatal access to care. So good to see you again, Haley.
Hi, and I'm just talking about the resolution
Okay.
with you all tonight, but we can talk about next steps after that. Thank you, Mallory, for pulling that up. Okay, so hello again, Haley Pickus. I'm the Family Initiatives Coordinator with Clark County Public Health. I'm happy to be here again this month to talk about the resolution going before the Board of Health tomorrow morning, relating to the importance of access to high quality pregnancy-related health care and declaring a commitment to addressing root causes of access gaps for Medicaid or Apple Health clients in Clark County. What? There we go. Next slide. Be great.
Sorry, I was trying to make it.
No worries.
It doesn't look like I'm going to try it one more time. I apologize, but I just want to see if it'll do full screen mode. It gave me an error. It's looking like that's not going
Yeah,
to work. I'm sorry.
that's
Okay.
okay.
Next slide.
Okay, so just a quick overview reminder, the Board of Health directed this resolution earlier in the year after a presentation and briefing from Public Health in April on the persistent prenatal access to care gap among Clark County Medicaid clients, and then also on the structure of our Medicaid program here in Washington, including how managed care operates within that system. We were alerted in late 2023 by our partners at WIC, the Women, Infant, and Children Nutrition Program, about access gaps. And after that, we conducted an analysis of birth certificate data, as well as a community provider scan. And results of both of those were published in early 2025, which preceded that April presentation to the Board of Health. At the board's direction and with the support of Chair Marshall and FAC, we convened a policy summit on June 9th. And then at last month's Board of Health meeting, Melissa Martin, our Life Course Program Manager, shared our ongoing work in this space, carrying forward priorities that arose during the summit. So this resolution was put together, and we'll pull it up on the screen in a second if you haven't had a chance to see it yet. To provide guidance to public health in forming a work plan that includes activities and priorities of the county regarding access to care moving forward. Looking ahead, we can expect work towards a legislative agenda and areas for the board, in fact, to support getting any local efforts off the ground. We've heard from our health systems, our major health systems here, that there's a need for a third-party neutral convener to sort of support these efforts moving forward. And public health looks forward to playing that role for our community. Tomorrow morning, the board will have the opportunity to hear from a couple of those system partners who will briefly share their experiences within the maternity healthcare system here in the county and their support of this resolution and the Department and Board of Health's work moving forward. So, speaking tomorrow from the Vancouver Clinic, we'll be joined by Dr. Alfred Seacamp, who's an OBGYN and the Chief Medical Officer at the Vancouver Clinic, as well as Rebecca Birnbaum, who's the Chief Operating Officer at the Vancouver Clinic. We'll also be joined by Cherelle Montagnier, who's the Chief Hospital Executive at Peace Health Southwest Medical Center. And then the president of Legacy Salmon Creek Medical Center, John Hirschen, can't attend, had a prior commitment, but they've showed their support of the resolution and pursuing next steps collectively with this group. Next slide. So when this draft resolution was shared with the county council during council time last week, there was one question from Councillor Little inquiring if FAC is supportive and advises that the board move forward with the resolution. So I think we're interested in hearing tonight, and open to any comments or questions on the resolution that they'll see tomorrow, and to understand, if there's any message that we can carry forward on behalf of FAC tomorrow morning at the Board of Health. So I'll stop there. Mallory can probably pivot over to the resolution if folks haven't had the opportunity to look at it yet. It's posted to the Board of Health webpage. And I'll stop and see Dr. Melnick if there's anything you'd add or if anyone has any questions or comments about this next step.
If we put up the resolution, I think it'll save time to go through the resolve part rather than go through all the whereases. But we can talk about all of it.
Yeah, I wasn't even gonna, I was just gonna pull it up and if people wanted to ask any questions. But yeah, Mallory, if you do want to scroll, kind of the whereas statements articulate the current situation, and kind of looking at data and where there's access gaps, and the importance of early and regular prenatal care. And then the kind of structure of resolutions is the now therefore be it resolved section is kind of what we would build a public health and
Yeah,
board of health
let's
back
go
work
down to the
plan
resolve
based off
section
of.
there.
Yeah.
That all fit on one? Is there anything on the following page, or do we have it? See if you can fit it all, the resolves in
Those just those bullet points.
one
Okay.
page
Yeah,
there.
there we go.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. People have questions, concerns. Thoughts.
This is Lori. No concerns, just wholehearted support for all the work that's been done and really appreciative of this. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, just to summarize it, I mean, there are issues around payment and the payment mechanisms, the workforce, data quality about being able to see how we're doing, what we need to, what we might want to, the need to draft a legislative agenda on this. Our representatives and senators have been part of the process. They were at the summit. Work collectively, when it says convene elected officials, that includes folks like our Board of Health, private, public-private partnerships, working at all levels, federal, state, and local, the challenges there, and then look for funding sources as well. So, It's what we came up with at, I think, with the partners at the summit.
I think it looks like a really strong resolution. And at this point, Haley, do you want us to kind of, we can't vote on anything because we don't have a quorum, but we
Right.
could all kind of talk about our support in some way and how that might be transmitted to the counselors? Or would someone need to be there to say that? Or what would be your best recommendation for us?
I think we had talked about maybe a motion and support, but since you don't have a quorum, you can't do that, which is fine. So I'm happy to just kind of generally share any comments that you all have. If you want to send someone there tomorrow, that's fine, but you don't
Can I
have
make a
to.
suggestion?
Yeah.
So tomorrow, after the Board of Health meeting, there's going to be a work session where the Board of Health is going to hear a presentation from Wasalfo about the different models of, boards of health with, non-electeds versus having a community health advisory board like FAC. I think, and then we're going to be doing the retreat in October. But I think it might be, I mean, if it's possible, I don't want to put anybody on the spot there because I know you're all really busy, to have a FAC member or more actually, you can do it either virtually or be present. Public comment about this
I can
will
do that.
basically illustrate the value of FAC and FAC members in providing input to the Board of Health. That's just a thought, if it's possible. I don't want to guilt trip anybody here either.
I was thinking the same thing, reading through this and knowing that that conversation is coming up. I can, especially since we don't have a quorum to officially say it. I can do that tomorrow. I don't know if anyone else would like to do that as well.
And Emily, that's great. And in doing so, you can talk not only as your role
I was there.
about your role on FAC, but also about your lived experience, what you've already said and your lived experience. Because that's what I can't speak. I don't know how well Counselor Young is tonight, but I think the Board of Health is really interested in getting as much community input as they can.
But I think you'd be a good choice. And as vice chair, I think you could represent FAC really well. And again, being that you were there and part of all of that, I think it's a good choice. I would attend if I wasn't leaving town early in the morning, but I think you're a good choice. Although if there's others that want to attend and also speak to it, I think that would be welcomed as well.
What time is the meeting again?
8:30, and Bree, you'd be great because of your background, and you can. They want the Board of Health. I mean, in some of the models around the state, the non-elected members include people from healthcare, and I think your role, not to put pressure on you, because I know you're really busy. You can speak from your background and all that about prenatal care and its value and provide input to the Board of Health.
8:30. I have a 7 to 8 meeting. I could try
It's virtual if you need to be.
if it's for, okay, I could make that happen. Do
I mean,
I?
we do, yeah. We do have John Hurston, well, points from John Hurston, but I think you
Okay.
appearing virtually with your background would be great.
Okay.
I think
You
these are
just.
good opportunities to put FAC before the Board of Health and showing our interest in these various topics. And they're asking about our interest in it and our voices. So I think this is another one of those good opportunities for us to do that. So I appreciate each of you for volunteering to do that.
It doesn't matter whether FAC votes on it tonight. I think you can appear as a member of FAC and speak for yourself as a member of FAC because that provides the fact that you all come from the backgrounds that you come from as individuals, you add a lot to the discussion with the Board of Health. Okay, I'm talking too much. I apologize.
So, I just want to make sure I'm clear. Emily, maybe Rian, you'll be participating during the open public comment and kind of sharing your perspective as a member of FAC. Okay, do you both know how to sign up for open
No,
public?
that was
Okay,
going to be my next question.
we'll mail email or you'll get you information after the meeting so that you're all set to do that virtually.
Thank
I could
you
go in
so
person and
much.
bring the 3-year-old that was,
You're welcome in person too, of course.
Thinking about virtual is you got the 3-year-old right there with
Yeah,
you,
right.
too.
Yeah,
really.
Or
With
you can
snacks
bring
right in
them
front of
to.
them. Yeah. Are there any
Great.
other questions about the resolution or what kind of led to this or next steps? I'm sure we'll all be back again in the fall. Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, Haley. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
All right, next on our agenda is Dr. Melnick with his report on the outlook of respiratory season and the West Coast Health Alliance. So we're anxious to hear some of this. Although you're muted, so we can't hear your wonderful words of wisdom.
Are we going to show the slideshow or
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm sorry. I don't know why my computer is extremely slow right now. It likes to do this during FAC.
computers are wonderful things until they don't work.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, full screen mode isn't going to work
I don't
again.
think we need full screen. So, well,
Okay.
some of the graphs may be a little bit tough to
I can
see.
zoom in if I need to.
I think we'll get the point across anyway. So, okay, if you go to the next slide, and this will be on the presentation to the Board of Health as well. Next.
Are you guys seeing anything?
No.
See the blank screen.
Yes.
Okay, it's a blank screen on my end too. Let me stop. Sh I don't know what's happening. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I'm going to reopen. I apologize. I'm sorry, it's still loading. Okay, fingers crossed.
Great. So let's go to the next slide. See if it works. You can't just push page down, huh?
I'm working on it. I keep pushing it.
Is it your computer or?
It may be. I had to. There we go. There we go.
Okay. So first we're talking about this is a respiratory illness update for you. So the next slide, we're going to be talking about current activity. So we're going to be talking about three different respiratory infections here. Influenza, RSV or respiratory syncytial virus, and COVID-19. So as you can see, the green bar is 2024, 20 is goes into 25, and then the dotted line, the dark dotted line, is last year, and then the more faint dotted line is the year before. You can see that we had a later flu season this past year than the year before. But right now you can see we're up to August and September on the right there, so it's currently low, which is normal. We don't generally see flu this often. It usually it occurs through in Clark County through October through May. Last season, as you can see, we started picking up in November. So we define activity. You can see the scale on the left there. We define flu a season when more than 10% of flu tests come out positive. That's so, for 2 consecutive weeks. So people go to the ED, the emergency department, for example, get tested. When more than 10% of those are positive, we're in flu season. I think that we started in early December. We reached that. I'm not sure about the scale there, because I know we were above 10%. So, peaked in late January, nearly 40% of flu tests came back positive. So, the scale on the left, I'm sorry, is not the percent of tests that are positive. The scale on the left is a percent of influenza emergency department visits for Clark County. So, but it was reflected in the positivity rates of tests being done. You can see that at the height of there, nearly 8% of emergency department visits were for people with flu. And the positivity rate of samples was well above 10%. Okay, next slide, please. Uh-oh. This may be a long page down doesn't work, huh?
Well, it was.
How about the little bar on the right, on the vertical bar there?
There you
Yeah.
go.
There you go. Okay. So, RSV in older folks, older children, it's a pretty common respiratory virus that usually causes mild cold-like symptoms. But virtually all children get an RSV infection by the time they're 2 years of age. And most people recover from RSV in a week or two, but it can be really serious, including deadly for infants and older adults. It's also a seasonal virus like influenza. And you can see from the blue line there, that's 2024-25. Right now, we're not seeing any activity. We did see an increase, and these are emergency department visits on the left there, due to RSV last respiratory illness season, with rates increasing in December and coming back down in the spring, as you can see there. However, you can see that the emergency department visits this past year were lower than in the previous years. And again, in older children and young adults, it's a pretty mild illness, but it can be really severe, very severe in infants, with a lot of hospitalizations and even some mortality. Infants can get lower respiratory and tract infections. Pneumonia is a complication of this, for example. Okay, next slide, please. We'll go to COVID-19. So COVID-19 doesn't follow the same seasonal pattern that the other respiratory illnesses. And you can see that the COVID-19, the red line, is the current year. And you can see that the activity increased this past summer. So over the last month, about 1 to 1.5% of emergency room visits have been due to COVID-19. And that's similar. We're seeing in Clark County is really similar to the state. And nationally, the percentage of emergency department visits for COVID-19 is peaking. And we think we're about ready to peak here as well. And the other thing that many states are doing, including Washington, is monitoring for COVID-19 in wastewater. And many states recently have had high or very high levels of COVID-19 activity in wastewater. And we've had moderate to high levels of COVID-19 here in wastewaters over the last recently. Okay. And people can ask questions at any time if you want. I can do a monologue here. So now we're going to go to the vaccine recommendations. We're going to talk about rates first when we talk about recommendations. So this really disturbs me. For the last season around flu, and remember all the emergency department visits we had for flu, only about 20, less than 30% of about one quarter of Clark County residents received the flu vaccine last year. It's incredibly safe. It tends to be 40 to 60% effective, and we're at 20, we're about one out of quarter of Clark County residents receiving the flu vaccine last year. I'm going to go down to the bottom. Less than one out of five of Clark County residents received a COVID vaccine last year, this past year. And that we're not where we're, the state is not much better, but we're all pretty low. And then I want to talk about RSV. It's recommend adults 75 and older can get really serious illness with RSV. And less than half of them have received, and the RSV vaccine has been out for adults, and it's a one-time, unlike COVID-19 and flu, where you get revaccinated every year. RSV vaccine is a one-time dose, and it's been available for over the past 2 years. And yet, even with it available for the last 2 years, less than 50% of adults 75 and older have received it. Safe, effective. Can be deadly in this age group, and that's where we're at. Okay, next slide, please. So here are the current of the vaccines. For influenza, everyone 6 months of age and older should receive a flu vaccine every year. There's multiple options, including a nasal mist and high dose and adjuvant adjuvanted for people at high risk. And that means they're created to be a bit more like powerful. All the 2025-26 flu vaccines in the United States are trivalent. That means they get three versions of the virus and protect against two strains of influenza A and one strain of influenza B. Everybody, I said is over 6 months, 6 months in age and older is eligible. The effectiveness depends on how well the vaccines are matched to the strains that are currently circulating. During the last season, they were 41 to 55% effective at preventing hospitalization for adults. Remember the percentage of adults who received the flu vaccine, and remember the number of ED visits. And they were 63 to 78% at preventing hospitalization for children. Now is a good time to get the flu vaccine. It'll protect you for the season. It takes 2 weeks to build protection. And getting vaccinated, we don't know for sure. I showed you some graphs about when flu appears. We don't know when it appears. It could appear early. It takes 2 weeks to build up the immunity, and you know, you get it now, you're protected through the season. And they should be available, flu vaccine should be available to community in the community at local pharmacies and medical clinics. Next slide, please. Okay, RSV. It's recommended for two groups. The vaccine is recommended for two groups, older adults and pregnant people. So for older adults, only one dose, as I mentioned earlier, you just get it once. It's not an annual vaccine. It's recommended for those who are 75 years of age and older, and 50, and people who are aged 50 to 74 years, in fact, at increased risk for severe illness. So other underlying, other conditions that they might have that put them more at risk. And that's something people can talk to their physicians about as well. There's three options, two protein vaccines and one mRNA vaccine. It's more than 70% at preventing hospitalization, which gets me going about the small percentage of people 75 years of age and old who've received it. And the timing is anytime, given that it's if you're going to get it for the first time, and it's only a one-time deal, you want to get it August to October to pr protect you for the through that first season. For pregnant people, it's also a one-dose vaccine, and it's not an annual, like it's not an annual vaccine, and it's not recommended for each pregnancy. But for those who have not been previously vaccinated, they should get the vaccine between 32 and 36 weeks of pregnancy. And the timing for that is September to January, because the point of it is to protect the infant who is going to be born during the RSV season. So 32 to 36 weeks of pre if you're between 32 and 36 weeks of pregnancy between September and January, that's the time to get the vaccine if you haven't had it before. And you can see that it is 68% effective at preventing hospitalizations of your infant within 3 months of birth, and 57% within 6 months of birth. And again, overall, during the 2020 or 25 season, the vaccine was 70 to 79% of preventing hospitalization for infants. For infants who are whose mothers did not receive RSV vaccine in this timing, there's a monoclonal antibody. So it's not technically a vaccine, it's protective. Vaccines work by giving stimulating your body to make antibodies. So often they're a killed or weakened germ that basically stimulates your immune system to make antibodies, and it also creates memory cells that can remember it as well. A monoclonal antibody is an is a passive protection, is it's given you already preformed antibodies that will attack the whatever's in the germ that they're designed to protect from. So all infants younger than 8 months whose mother didn't receive the RSV vaccine during pregnancy should get this. And then high-risk children who are older than that, between 8 and 19 months of age, and that you should talk to your pediatrician about. So if they're born between October and March, they should get this the first week of life. And then if born between April and September, for the high-risk children, should get it between October and November. And as you can see, it's more than 80% effective in preventing hospitalization. It's called nirsevimab. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, just want to mention, you may have read in the newspaper or heard on the news about the West Coast Alliance. On September 3rd, our governor joined the governors from Oregon and California to announce the formation of the West Coast Alliance, and then Hawaii joined on the following day. The reason this regional alliance was developed is it was developed in response to what the decisions that are happening at the federal level that have undermined the guidance that we used to receive from the CDC. And myself and other public health officials, all of us have historically depended on the CDC for evidence-based recommendations. But given what's happened with the ACIP, the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices at the CDC, we can't really rely there anymore on recommendations in terms of preventing, protecting our communities and our public. So that's why this West Coast Health Alliance is formed. And the states, the four states involved, share a common commitment to protect the public, to ensure that our public health recommendations are guided by safety, efficacy, transparency, access, and trust. Through the alliance, the states are coordinating our recommendations or health guidelines by aligning our immunization recommendations informed by respected national medical organizations, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and the American Academy of Family Practice. So that's where that's and the what the information we're putting out from Clark County Public Health is aligning with these efforts. Next slide, please. That includes the COVID-19 standing order. So on September 4th, the Washington State Department of Health issued a standing order for COVID-19 vaccines. And this action was taken to improve access. You may have heard that in other states, people are having difficulty getting access to the COVID-19 vaccine. Standing orders, there's been some misinformation about this. Standing orders are not mandates. What standing orders do, they act like a prescription, and they basically, so you may have heard that in other areas, people were unable to get the vaccine at pharmacies because the pharmacist told them they needed to have a prescription. That's what a standing order is done. You can think of a standing order as like an order in the restaurant when you order a meal or something. It's not a mandate or requirement. It actually makes life easier for people by not having to go to the doctor to get a prescription. You can just go to the pharmacy and you don't need to show a prescription because of the standing order. But it doesn't order the pharmacist to do anything. It allows the pharmacist to give you the prescription, the vaccine if you ask for it. It's your choice. So it allows physicians, pharmacists, medical assistants, and other qualified healthcare providers, including nurses, to give the vaccine to anybody 6 months of age and older, including pregnant people. They're not directives. While the standing order gives you access to the vaccine, you may still be responsible for the cost of the vaccine. But the good news is the vaccines continue to be recommended by private insurers, Apple Health, our Medicaid program, and Washington's adult vaccine and childhood vaccine programs. So you can check with your insurance provider if you have any questions about coverage. Next slide, please.
I just wanted to say about that. I follow the Clark County Public Health Facebook page and like a lot of the comments that happen on things. And I think you guys did an exceptionally good job explaining that it is a standing order and not like a directive in that they have to do anything. That was like in every single line of absolutely everything. So there was no room for anyone to say, and they're making us do this. And I just noticed that that went better on this one than it did on a lot of other posts about it from other places.
Yeah, and if you ever, if you ever, I hope nobody gets hospitalized, but if you're in a hospital, you know the physicians write orders. But that doesn't mean that allows the staff to,
Yeah. It was really good health communication about it.
Yeah, these are not, yeah, thank you. Sometimes when the standing order just came out, there was no great messaging or explanation about it, and our program our manager of all our communications efforts, Marissa Armstrong, who's great at social media use, basically made sure that we explained it so people would understand that we're not forcing people. We're actually making it easier for people to make the choice to get vaccinated, but we're not requiring them or forcing them to get vaccinated. So I'm glad that
Notice
worked
the
anyway. Yeah, but you could see those, and feel free. when you see comments on the social media page that we have to weigh in on that. So, yeah. Okay, the vaccine recommendations for COVID-19. We will continue to recommend that everyone 6 months of age and older, including pregnant people, receive the updated COVID-19 25-26 vaccine. It protects against severe illness, hospitalizations, and death, and it's in alignment with our state health department, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and the American Academy of Family Medicine. Everyone 6 months of age and older is eligible under the statewide standing order. Several COVID-19 vaccines are approved for use. Each is approved for different age groups. So the Pfizer Comirnaty vaccine, I don't ever say pronounce it correctly. People 5 years of age and older. The FDA revoked this authorization vaccine for children 6 months to 4 years of age. The Moderna, the Spikevax vaccine for people 6 months and older. And then those are mRNA vaccines I just mentioned. And then the Novavax is a protein vaccine for people 12 years of age and older who choose to get that one if they don't want to get an mRNA vaccine. By the way, the mRNA vaccines are incredibly safe, just as a protein vaccine is safe. But some people choose not to get the mRNA vaccine. There's a second Moderna vaccine called mNEXSPIKE, which uses a smaller dose than Spikevax and was recently approved for people 12 years of age and older. The effectiveness for adults, the vaccine is about 34 to 30, 45% effective at preventing hospitalization for adults, which is pretty darn good. You can get it as soon as it's available. And people who recently had COVID-19 can wait 4 to 6 months after infection to get vaccinated. Where you can get it, a number of healthcare providers and pharmacies have already received it, and others are still waiting to receive supplies. But you can check with your healthcare provider or pharmacy to see when they expect to have the vaccine available. And I think that's the end of the presentation.
Very
Oh
good.
no, we got one more, got another slide.
Now,
Sorry. Did you have a question you want me to? I'll just go through and finish. So, besides getting vaccinated or getting the monoclonal antibodies for infants, stay home if you're sick, keep sick children home from school. A mask still work regardless of what you hear on social media. So, if you have to be in a crowded indoor place, or especially if somebody you live with you want to bring it home to them is at high risk for severe illness, you can mask. Wash your hands, soap and water, cover your cough and sneeze with your elbow. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands because you can spread it to the mucous membranes. Clean and disinfect commonly touched surfaces and avoid spending time with people who are sick. Let me see if that's the last slide. Up. Nope. I think this one is. So we're going to be monitoring it. Check with our social media channels. And as we did in the past in the slides I showed you, we'll show you data on emergency department visits and hospitalizations. And we'll be monitoring influenza and COVID-19 deaths. And we'll be monitoring influenza test positivity so we can tell you when we've achieved the 10% for 2 consecutive weeks and we're into the flu season. And Bree has her hand up here.
and I just wanted to mention the previous slide, the hand hygiene guidance for soap and water that is effective, but also hand sanitizer.
Thank you.
over-the-counter sanitizers are effective against all respiratory viri.
Thank you.
For children under 5 who had previously had Pfizer doses, and that is now revoked. If they're getting a new one,
They
is
can
that
get
like,
the Moderna
okay,
vaccine.
they don't have to like redo some other, see, okay.
Any other questions?
was a really nice review of what's going on and what we need to do to prevent the statistics of being high again next year. So I think there's
By
two of
the
us that are already going to get our COVID and flu shots here in the next few days. So hopefully others of you are getting on the list as well.
way, I mentioned to you about COVID-19 vaccine and pregnancy. I'd point out that infants, remember, infants younger than 6 months are not eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. But if their mothers get vaccinated while they're pregnant, that protects them during the first 6 months. So besides preventing women who are pregnant can get severe complications from COVID-19, including increased risk of hospitalization and even death. And there's certain risk to birth outcomes as well, increased stillbirth and complications, low birth weight and stuff like that. But getting the vaccine not only prevents that, but it helps protect the infant in their first 6 months of life as well. I see Bree is nodding her head, so I know I'm on the right track there. So.
And also the RSV vaccine for pregnant women. I had a personal experience with my youngest, who is now 12, going on 30. He got RSV from me right at the, I got a cold right at the end of my pregnancy and passed it on to him within his first week of life. And he spent an entire week in our local pediatric unit here at Salmon Creek back in the day when we still had,
So, Bray, just to put you on the spot here, now that you mentioned that, if you're willing to do this, since you may be on the virtual board of, this is going to be presented to the Board of Health tomorrow. So you can comment on that as well in terms of the, you can comment on anything that's on the Board of Health agenda. And the public comment period occurs, I believe, after the presentation. So, the way we've got it set up. So feel completely free. If not forcing, it's your choice. It's not a mandate, but to share that, because I think the stories, I mean, we give data. We're really good at providing data, public health, but the stories are really helpful.
It was a really scary time, and watching
So
my
sorry.
little tiny infant just struggling for air, it was horrific.
Yeah. And now we got a vaccine that, and of course, it's only one time for pregnant women. So if you had another pregnancy, and it was the timing was right, we would go ahead and do the monoclonal antibodies. So.
Yeah, I wish it was available back in 2012. So it
And
is,
that's
it's
the
here
problem with
now.
RSV, and in an adult like you, it can be like a mild cold, but in kids. Young children and infants, it's yeah, I'm so sorry that you went through that.
I didn't even know. As a nurse, I worked in the ICU with adults, so I had no idea that infants can't breathe through their mouths. That they only breathe through their noses, and if their noses get clogged with secretions, they can't breathe. I had no idea.
And it's pretty miserable as a parent or grandparent to have to watch them try to suck that stuff out of their nose too. My youngest grandson spent 3 days in ICU with RSV, again, as an infant. It was horrible.
So another reason, if you've ever seen a kid with pertussis, whooping cough, that's scary. And another vaccine that we have that people are not even aware of is something called Haemophilus influenza vaccine. So for those of us who are old enough to remember doing this is in training, Haemophilus influenza it can cause meningitis, but it can also cause epiglottitis in young in infants. And the epiglottis is this little flap that goes over your windpipe. And if you've ever seen an infant with, it is the scariest thing you'll ever see with, but we don't see it anymore because we've got a safe and effective vaccine for it.
The
This
only
is Mark.
time,
Sorry, this is Marlai. My camera's still not working, sorry. But I just wanted to add one other anecdote. And that was a few years ago, number of years ago, and I worked at Seattle Children's. I worked there many, many years. And it was during the RSV season, and the hospital was full of babies that were going through what I've heard you all describe is a very, very hard thing to witness. And not too long after that period of time, I was flying on an airplane and I heard a baby a few seats ahead of me that had the classic RSV cough. Nothing else sounds like it. It's very unique. And so as soon as the plane landed, there was nothing I could do for the child during the flight. But I did go up to the mom as people were getting off the plane and I told her, I said, I'm pretty sure your baby has RSV and I strongly suggest that you take your baby to a physician and have your child looked over and get some suggestions for what you can do to help your baby with their breathing. And she was very grateful. She didn't say none of your business or, anything like that. She was just frantic and happy for any advice. So it was scary.
It's pretty awful, and we can prevent it now, which is.
The only time that I was ever sick and in the hospital was a few major years back. I had epiglottitis, and but I was just a young child, and but that was it. And I was it's hard to even remember that, but that was the only time I was ever in a hospital. So.
The eyes get really big because the kids are terrified. They can't breathe. Sorry, not very cheery. I apologize.
That's why we need to get vaccinations so we
That's
can have
right.
cheery news.
What we're going to see again. I'm so sorry.
All right. Do we have any other comments or questions for Dr. Melnick? Well, it's a good report, and I'm sure we'll want to hear in a few months what the how the season is winding down for us. So, all right. We have some membership updates, as Mallory had shared with us in some past months. We've had a lot of membership terms end, and we've had some recruitment out. So to report, Tracy Fernandez has been approved, and she's our Peace Health Southwest Medical Center representative. So she'll be returning, which we're happy about. Brian Kessel has also been approved to be the new Clark County Law Enforcement representative, and so he'll be joining us in October. Paul Childers has also been renewed. We've received his signed acceptance letter, and it's going to be on the consent agenda for, I think, tomorrow, or was that today? Or he's holding a breath.
I think it was today. I gotta check. I can tell you in a second.
So his letter is in the mail. So
Yes, it was
anyway.
for today. Sorry, it was
Okay,
for
it was
today.
for today. Okay. So we'll look forward to having Paul returning. We have been advertising for the nurse practicing in Clark County, and we've gotten a couple of applications, but that doesn't close until the end of this month. So we have to wait until it closes and see if we get any more applications, but we've had two really good applications come through. So I'm pretty sure we're going to have a great addition to our membership for a nurse practicing in Clark County. We also have received applications for the medical doctor practicing in Clark County, as well as the Clark County Commission on Aging. And those are currently in the counselor's office for review of their applications. And so hopefully they'll be on an October consent agenda and we'll be getting those members as well. So I think if all of those go through and we get them consent and their letters off to them, we'll have a full membership or close to it once again by the end of the year, by close to the end of the year. So yay, we'll start out the new year with a full board.
And Paul
So,
was number two on the consent agenda and it passed. I just, yeah.
okay, good.
You're
So
in,
you should
Paul.
be getting your letter. Good. Well, we're glad you're going to continue, Paul.
Thank you very much. It's been
So,
many, many
Dr.
years.
You have been, yes.
Yeah.
I think you're one of the founding fathers, if I remember right.
Exactly. Exactly. When we were at the other building.
So, Dr. Melnick had referred to this in some previous comments that the next Board of Health FAC work session or retreat is going to be on October 21st from 9 till noon. And we've had one of these already, and several of you attended, and it was well received. On October 21st, we're going to be discussing the three models for the FAC, and the counselors are the Board of Health are really interested in hearing what our opinions are. I don't think they have a set idea. They're going to have their training about what the differences are between the three, and we've also had that training. And so they're really going to be wanting to hear from us about what we feel would be a good, do we want to keep with this FAC model? Do we want to change to another? Do we want a combination of two? And so I would like to really encourage as many of you as can possibly make it on the 21st to come to that meeting and really be able to speak and answer their questions that they might have as well. I think it's going to be a really important time for us to speak out about, why we like being on FAC, why we like it the way it is, or, do we like a different model or do we like a combination? But really voicing our opinion. And I suspect they'll have some questions for us as well.
The other thing I'd add to that is you all heard the presentation from Wesolfo. The Board of Health is hearing it tomorrow, but several of us, including a couple of council members and a couple of FAC members, are attending the role. This is the third, I think, time this has been held. The public health law and the roles of boards of health. There's a we're going to Ellensburg, I believe, for a few days. In early October, I think it's like the 5th or something like that.
I guess the 6th through the 9th, yes, in Ellensburg.
So I'm going, I believe, Councilor Fuentes and Council, I think it's Council Chair Marshall, but I'm not sure. I think there's two members.
It's
Councillor
actually going to be
Young.
myself this time.
Okay, great. So you and Councilor Fuentes, Councilor
Correct.
Young?
Yeah.
So they'll be there, and I think Bria's going to be there. Who else is going from FAC? Because last time, the first time FAC members went, the second time a couple of counselors went. This time we're going to have both there.
And I think Emily's going
Yeah.
too.
You're muted.
I signed up to go and then I didn't do the hotel reservation in enough time. And so
No.
I'm like waitlisted. We'll see what happens.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything, Danette? I'm wondering if we can work with Wesolfo and see if we can get. It's we really need to get Emily there.
Yep,
I'll help.
I'll
I'll do
check in
whatever it
with them.
takes.
I'm with them this week, so I'll check while I'm here.
Yeah, you're right there. You're at
Yeah.
the yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
I had emailed, but and they said we're going to keep you on a list, and someone's going to cancel, and so we'll reach out to you. But I did not know that there were other strings and levers of power to be pulled.
I think the interaction of you two and the two counselors, and going through this together will actually add some richness to the discussion on the 21st.
Have some family who live about an hour away from there that I was like, well, if it doesn't work out, maybe I just go stay there and drive.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I didn't realize that I needed to do that before it closed. So,
All right.
my
So
bad.
anyway, and Mallory will probably be sending out a reminder with the minutes and so on as it gets a little closer to make sure that we can get as many people as possible at that meeting. And again, it'll be from 9 to noon on October 21st. So if you can put it on your calendars now, that would be great. Community updates. Does anybody have anything they want to share with us on community updates or what's going on with your organization or community concerns? Lori.
I
I know I mentioned it before, but the it's just such a great event. So the BIPOC Youth Summit is really about creating community and support and belonging for young folks of color. And so just want to let folks know I can put the, I think I've got it there. I'll drop it in if folks are interested in that, the Youth Summit, and it's November 8th and 9th. It's a full day on Saturday and a half day on Sunday. So if you have young folks that you work with or connections that you can share that with, that's great. Or also folks are wanting to interested in potentially volunteering, feel free to contact and let them know. And Dr. Melnick, you asked before, there's also on the, they were calling it a block party because youth don't tend to be drawn to a resource fair, I think. But yes, for tabling, I can connect you with Sam Garrison. So I will do that email. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for reminding us, Lori. Anybody else have anything out there to share?
I have a quick update from Legacy. We are moving forward with construction plans for a new observation unit. I think I mentioned that last time, but plans are still moving forward, and we're starting to look at layouts and how many beds we're going to be able to get. So hopefully I can have some information soon about that. And then we are also in the very beginnings of our respiratory season planning stages. So more meetings to come and preparation with Region 4 and all of our fellow community members out there. Thank you, Dr. Melnick, for everything you do.
It's a team effort.
I don't know how many might be aware of the SNAP education program that had been going on for a number of years in all of the communities. I happened to direct it when I was working at WSU, and it's been around for about 30 years, and it worked with farmers markets to give extra benefits for EBT. And we did a lot of education around local food access and using their SNAP dollars and eating healthy. That program has been defunded by the federal government, and it will no longer exist as of November 1st. So it's kind of devastating, to say the least. And so this Thursday, all of us that have been involved in that program are having a celebration of what we were able to accomplish over the last 33 years. I was involved in it the second year it became available as an education program around the state. But as funding comes and goes, it will no longer be in existence. So just if you hadn't heard.
Sandy, my family personally benefited from that program, and I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I think we just need to be proud of what that program did, both locally in the state and nationally, and walk around away feeling proud of that. We can be sad it's not going to continue, but that's not going to change, I don't think. So I think we were hopeful that some of the funding would come back, but it didn't. So, and we're starting to hear more ramifications of the SNAP Ed funding going away and the match at the farmers market and different things like that. So anyway, I didn't mean to end on a sad note,
We have a
but
lot of work to do.
yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, thanks for all the work that went into it. That sounds like it was really has been a powerful program.
And it's going to fall on other agencies or groups to help that clientele, and it's going to be harder for them as their SNAP benefits get reduced as well. So it's even more important for that kind of help and assistance to continue. So,
Of
anyway.
course, the feds are not measuring hunger anymore, so they got rid of that data set. You may have seen that news. So,
Well, and it's one of those things where it's hard. I mean, we can measure it to a certain extent, but it's hard to measure and show the impacts, like you can with something else that's dollars and cents or people dying or whatever. So,
Yeah, this is one of the databases that the federal HHS is getting rid of. So it was, I think it was a hunger. I forget what it's called. Yeah.
right. So, anyway, let's see. I don't think there's any public here, so we don't need to ask for the public comment. The next meeting is going to be on October 28th, and this one is going to be in person. So it will be down at the public health, and it will start at 5 o'clock with dinner. And I'm sure Mallory will be preparing a lovely dinner for us, as she always does. And then we'll start our meeting at 5:30. Our November-December meeting in historically has been put together because or merged because usually our meeting falls on Thanksgiving or the week before of Thanksgiving, and that's not a very good week to meet. So we're proposing that we could meet virtually on December 9th. Now, I know we don't have all of our members here, but for those of you that are here, would December 9th work for you?
Sure.
Does anybody not be able to do December 9th? That might be easier then.
Do
I
we need
don't.
a quorum to decide on that, or
I feel
I
like
don't
we
know,
like
but what
just
we could do is send an email, send a
else.
message out saying that, the folks who were present agreed to this, and then we need to hear from the rest of them.
What day is the ninth?
It also is a Tuesday.
No problema.
Good.
This is
So it'll be a great.
Marla. It will work for me if it is virtual.
It will be virtual. So the next in-person meeting will be in October, which is October 28th, just before Halloween.
And I don't think we have a virtual option at the Center for Community Health. So, Mallory, you can verify that.
No, since we only do an in-person meeting every quarter, we opted to not allow that to be virtual and that it would just be in person. So you're either able to show or you
Yeah.
can't.
All
So
right. Well,
we have the 21st and then we have the 28th.
right. The 21st is down at the down with the county counselors and Board of Health, and
Yes.
then the 28th is in person.
And the
Yes.
21st is whoever can. I mean, we would want as many of you as possible, but it's not counted as a, attendance for the meeting. We know you're really busy. And one of the things I think we will be exploring with the Board of Health might be having the joint meetings in the evening at some point, because some of the Board of Health meetings or the County Council meetings do start at 6 p.m. So that'll be up for discussion, I think, among other things.
This is
Okay,
Marla. I
so it
just
sounds
want to
like, oh,
throw
go
out.
ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Andy. I wanted to just say that for some of us who have the opportunity to be part of the year located elsewhere, if there'd be a way to have a hybrid meeting, we talked about it in the past, but I don't think that it was practical then. But it's just something I'd like to keep on the radar screen because I really do value the in-person meetings, but there's times when I'm just not available for that, but I could almost always do a virtual. So I just wanted to keep that kind of on the back burner.
Okay, so noted, Marla. We'll have a more of a conversation about that.
Thank you.
All right, so it sounds like I didn't hear anyone that's currently on the call on the Zoom that says December 9th does not work. So if Mallory can survey the others or put something out and see if that is an issue for others, we'll tentatively say that our last meeting of the year will be on December 9th. And we can review it again at our October member at our to at our October meeting. I'm getting tongue-tied. End of the day. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Welcome fall, even though it felt like summer today.
Yeah.
All right. If not, we will adjourn our meeting and we'll see you all face to face in October.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.